From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Walmart AMP presents Willie Nelson in Family with Allison Krauss in Union Station, featuring Jerry Douglas, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. The unique combination of musicianship and hit songs should create an evening of unforgettable moments. Tickets and more information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600.
KUAF is supported by ModThink, a social media strategy firm offering team-driven social media solutions for small and medium businesses and organizations. More information available on the web at modthink.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, the U.S. Geological Survey is taking a close look at the increase in tremors in Oklahoma. And Adam Posnack uses African-inspired religions and cultures' images for his pottery. His latest exhibit opens this week in Fayetteville.
First, the Rogers Fire Department is adopting a new smartphone application that could provide faster response for some types of emergencies. Tom Jenkins, Rogers Fire Chief, says the application was originally developed by a fire station in a small town in Southern California.
What it does is it notifies citizens who voluntarily download the free app, which is available both on Android and iPhone templates, and it notifies them if there is a cardiac arrest, somebody who is not breathing and does not have a pulse, within some radius of where they are out in public areas. And so it gives them an opportunity, if they choose, to intervene and use the skills that they've been taught. It also gives them information about the closest automatic external defibrillator, or an AED, which is the device that shocks a patient's heart back into a normal rhythm, hopefully.
Chief Jenkins says the app is not only targeted at off-duty firefighters, paramedics, doctors, and nurses, but also meant for thousands of lay people every year who go through the fire department's CPR training.
It's those people that are the force multiplier for us. If you look at standard fire department response times, the national standards, it's going to take us somewhere around a minute and a half to get a call processed at the 911 center and get resources moving towards an emergency. It takes another 4 or 5 minutes for those resources to arrive. And so you're talking about 6.5 minutes total response time, best case scenario in most circumstances, for people, trained responders, lights and siren, to get to the scene of an emergency. And that only gives us about a 35% chance statistically of saving somebody's life who's in cardiac arrest.
The chief says with more lay responders throughout the city and the potential for shorter response times to cardiac arrest calls, the new app could help save more lives in the city.
Many will be heading to lakes throughout Arkansas Independence Day weekend, and the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission will be patrolling the water. The commission is taking part in the national Operation Dry Water. The campaign includes saturated patrols and checkpoints on the state's bodies of water to ensure nobody is operating a boat under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Captain Stephanie Wetherington is the boating law administrator for the Game and Fish Commission. She says the initiative has been successful over the years that the commission has taken part.
This is actually the sixth year for Operation Dry Water, and every year we've been very successful. The numbers we do see them going down, which is what we want, is to see the number of DUIs going down. Again, this year don't have all the reports in yet. But right now I've got about half of the state reporting in, and we made 11 DUIs over this weekend.
Wetherington says boating while intoxicated can bring familiar risks to those involved.
Boating under the influence is just like driving under the influence. It's the same thing. The penalties are the same. The level of impairment is the same, 0.08 for on the road. It's the same for on the water. It's 0.08. If you are 0.08, you are legally impaired and should not be operating any type of vehicle or vessel. So it's the exact same thing as a DWI.
While passengers aren't prohibited from drinking on a boat, Wetherington cautions accidents like falling overboard can occur quickly, and impairment of any kind on a boat can make such situations more dangerous or deadly.
The quarantine of all U.S. Forest Service-owned caves and mines is being extended in Arkansas. The caves, including those at Devil's Den State Park and others in the Ouachita, Ozark, and St. Francis National Forests, have been closed for a few years to prevent the spread of white-nose syndrome, a disease fatal to many species of bats. Yesterday, the Forest Service extended those closures for another 5 years while scientists conduct more testing on potential white-nose fighting organisms and on solutions to prevent further spread of the disease. White-nose syndrome was confirmed to be present in Arkansas caves last year, and humans spread the disease on clothes or equipment taken into the affected caves. According to the Forest Service, violation of the cave closure order could result in fines of up to $5,000 for individuals, $10,000 for organizations, and or up to 6 months imprisonment.
New unemployment numbers for May show an increased jobless rate since June, but a still smaller unemployment rate than 1 year ago. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Northwest Arkansas metro area saw a 4.9% unemployment rate in May, above the April rate of 4.5%, but considerably lower than the May 2013 rate of 5.8%. Year over year, the overall labor force actually grew by about 1,400 jobs. The employment picture is similar in the Fort Smith metro area. The May unemployment rate was recorded as 6.3%, which is above the April unemployment rate of 5.9% and lower than the May 2013 rate of 7.8%. Year over year, the Fort Smith labor force added about 600 jobs.
Early voting begins today for residents of the Rocky Branch Rural Fire District. At issue is whether annual dues for the fire department should be placed on property owners' tax statements. Early voting takes place through Thursday at the Bentonville and Rogers County Clerk's offices. Election day is Tuesday. Voting will be held at the Bland Chapel on Twin Coves Road.
Construction in the vicinity of Veterans Park in Rogers has caused the annual 4th of July fireworks celebration to be moved to the Rogers High School Stadium on Dixieland Road. Parking will be available at the school's main parking lot, and the stadium's concession stands and restrooms will be open to the public. The event will begin at 6:30 July 3rd, with fireworks beginning at dusk.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals take the day off after losing to Frisco 9-2 yesterday in Springdale. The Nats, in second place in the Texas League North, resume play at Arvest Ballpark tomorrow night at 7 against Midland.
The voice of the baseball Razorbacks for the past 23 years is stepping down from the job. Chuck Barrett will remain the play-by-play voice for the football and basketball broadcasts. The University of Arkansas Athletic Department says it is conducting a national search for his replacement.
Mostly cloudy, 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows from the mid-60s in northwest Arkansas to 70 for the Arkansas River Valley. Partly sunny tomorrow, slight chance of showers. Highs will be around 82 in northwest Arkansas, 60% chance of showers tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley with highs in the upper 80s. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy, slight chance of showers, lows from the upper 50s to mid 60s. This is Ozarks at Large. Earthquakes in Oklahoma have dramatically increased since last autumn. Experts say a likely cause is wastewater being injected into deep geologic formations. In May, the United States Geological Survey issued a joint statement with the Oklahoma Geological Survey warning that the rise in tremors raises the possibility of damaging earthquakes. And as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, larger quakes in Oklahoma could affect western Arkansas.
In 2013, Oklahoma counted 109 magnitude 3.0 or greater earthquakes. And in the first half of 2014, the rate has doubled. 10 of those quakes were above magnitude 4.0. Oklahoma geophysicist Dr. Randy Keller.
Definitely made us a little more nervous about all this. And so we decided to update it a little bit and try to make people a little more thoughtful about preparations they might take to avoid problems when their house starts shaking a bit.
For example, purchasing earthquake insurance and moving your delicate objects to a more secure place. Keller directs the Oklahoma Geological Survey. In early May, his agency and USGS issued a joint earthquake hazard advisory warning that increased seismicity could trigger larger damaging earthquakes in Oklahoma. Now, the historic record reveals Oklahoma was a relatively quiet state seismically, with only two magnitude 3 or larger events occurring from 1978 to 2008, Until recently, the largest quake occurred in 1952, a 5.5 trembler in El Reno outside of Oklahoma City. Chimneys collapsed, plate glass windows shattered. Over the decades, underground thunder could be heard in Oklahoma along ancient faults, deep rumblings with little damage and only mild shocks. But starting in 2009, 60 small quakes were recorded, the beginning of a swarm which has increased each year since. The U.S. Geological Survey says this may not be a random fluctuation in natural seismicity, but rather injection-induced seismicity from oil and gas mine and disposal wastewater wells, causing underground formations to slip. Increased slickwater hydraulic fracturing or fracking has been occurring on the Woodford Shale, located across various geological provinces in Oklahoma. But don't forget, Dr. Randy Keller says, that Oklahoma historically is earthquake country, and a major fault crosses the state's midsection where the quakes have been occurring.
We call it the Nemaha Ridge that runs up north-south through central Oklahoma, and which is really not that impressive of a structure. There's a lot of small faults and so forth, but they're apparently creaking and groaning and moving during this swarm.
In November 2011, Oklahoma's largest earthquake ever, a magnitude 5.6, struck the town of Prague, damaging buildings and shaking a three-state region, including Arkansas. Scott Osbrooks is geohazard supervisor for the Arkansas Geological Survey.
Typically, it's the ones that are greater than a 4.0 have been felt in like the Fort Smith area, maybe as far as north as Rogers and Fayetteville in that area. So there has been a little bit of impact, if you will, to our state, and as far as like some of the residents along the border have felt some of those larger Oklahoma events.
Osbrooks and his team were on hand when an earthquake swarm struck north-central Arkansas in 2010. Linked to injection-induced seismicity on the Fayetteville Shale Formation in Faulkner County. By January 2011, the Arkansas Oil and Gas Commission had placed a ban on the drilling of new underground waste wells in that sensitive region. And 2 months later, several of the wells were permanently sealed.
Basically, we saw the same kind of increase in seismicity starting in about 2009, much similar to what they've seen in Oklahoma, where we just saw this steady, significant rate of activity through 2010. We especially saw what we call the Guy Greenbrier earthquake swarm take off in fall of 2010 and extended into spring of 2011. And with the instrumentation we had, we were basically able to pretty much isolate that all these quakes were occurring along a previously unknown fault that stretched from near Guy, Arkansas to the north down to Greenbrier, Arkansas in the south. And the fault was about 13 kilometers, so, you know, around 8 to 9 miles in length. And you know, we had February 28th, we had a magnitude 4.7, which was the largest in the sequence. We'd had three magnitude 4s, greater than magnitude 4s before that. But that 4.7 was the one that had followed almost 2 weeks of really intense seismicity. And when I say intense, we had lots of 3s, lots of felt events. I know that particular week, I live in the area, and I was getting woke up about 2 or 3 times a night. And with the earthquakes and stuff. And that 4.7 kind of changed the process. I mean, we were in working on behalf, at the bequest of the Oil and Gas Commission, doing our study in cooperation with Center for Earthquake Research and Information out of Memphis. They were providing some of the stations and the seismologist, Dr. Steve Horton. And we were studying this. And with that 4.7, the Oil and Gas Commission said, okay, we've seen this after the start of these two particular injection wells. They ordered those wells, and they actually ended up voluntarily shutting down before the order came through. And we pretty quickly begin to see a decrease in the seismicity. We finished our study. We reported our study to the Oil and Gas Commission that July, and the Oil and Gas Commission ordered the other two remaining wells in the area. There was a total of 4 that were basically ceased operation in this area surrounding and near this this fault. Since that time, this year so far, I think we've had one earthquake along that fault. Last year, I believe it was two. The year before that, we were down to eight. Prior to that, there was, I think, in 2011, there was around 700, and then, you know, the year, and then in 2010, at the start of it in the fall, there was over 600. So, you know, we went from basically around 1,300 earthquakes. The last half of 2010, the first half of 2011, down to where we've only had just a handful in the past couple of years.
By 2012, a scientific consensus had emerged that fracking on certain topography could be linked to earthquake activity. Like Arkansas, Oklahoma has beefed up its array of seismic monitoring stations, now numbering around 35. Oklahoma Corporation Commission has regulatory authority over the state's oil and gas industry, including many thousands of injection wastewater wells that operate across the state. In a public statement, the agency conceded the increased seismicity is unusual. And while the agency has adopted new rules on injection well permitting and oversight and is mapping areas of concern, it says there is no direct link to oil and gas activity and earthquakes in Oklahoma. Oklahoma geophysicist Dr. Randy Keller.
The Geological Survey is a science and service and education agency, and the Corporation Commission is the regulators, and then we have the industry groups, and we are working, you know, everybody wants to understand what's going on, and so we're working together on this.
With $1.4 million in new grant funding this summer from the U.S. Department of Energy, Dr. Keller and his team are monitoring the situation, and they'll be busy. A glance at the USGS Earthquake Hazard World Map reveals the most seismically active regions on Earth include Alaska, California, Japan, Indonesia, the Dominican Republic, and Oklahoma. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to monitor earthquake activity in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and really around the world, you can go to the website earthquake.usgs.gov.
In the second half hour of Ozarks, taking laser tag in northwest Arkansas to a whole new level.
So you hear that, you know, it's close. You know, we've almost won, and then you've got to keep, you know, defend them and keep the other players off. And then we've got jet flybys, so we can have jets sound like they're circling through.
A three-dimensional video game that ultimately allows young people to enjoy the outdoors. We'll explain later on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Qatar negotiated that trade of Taliban detainees for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. But what about other Americans being held hostage overseas?
It would naturally lead all the families to wonder, can we indeed negotiate with terrorists to make a swap or to get someone out?
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBR Boston.
Here and Now begins this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The Arkansas General Assembly is expected to act on legislation today about changing health insurance for public school employees, adding prison beds, and limiting lottery games. Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock reports on how day one of the special session affects the legislature going forward.
For the third time since 1909, the House of Representatives took roll, referred bills to committees, and made generous remarks about the natural state at the old State House in Little Rock. Though the state's motto has changed four times since 1909, most of the day's actions consisted of formally preparing bills and rules for floor votes later this week. House Speaker Davy Carter.
The question before the House is a motion to suspend for the duration of the special session House Rule 41 as it relates to the two-day calendaring of bills. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The ayes have it. The rule is suspended.
The first day of the session was brief, under an hour long, but most legislators appeared to enjoy their time sitting at old wooden desks inside what is the oldest standing state capitol building west of the Mississippi River. Speaker Carter pointed out affection for the old state house is something relatively new.
When the legislature did move to our current state capitol, the governor was quoted as saying, "The appearance of the Senate chamber was that of an old coal bin."
Historical reverence aside, legislators did act to push legislation on lottery restrictions, public school employee health insurance, and prison beds forward through committee actions. Floor votes are expected to take place this week. The items were largely agreed to ahead of time, a condition Governor Mike Beebe placed on calling a special session. But while the Joint Budget Committee easily passed a $6 million bill for 600 additional prison beds, Sherwood Democrat Jim Nichols tried to add one last provision. Nichols sought to address over $8 million the state has failed to pay employees of the prison system.
This is money that is actually owed to the prison workers.
So there are people that did not get a paycheck that worked.
They did not get a full paycheck that worked holidays, yes.
That was Republican Senator Bart Hester of Cave Springs in northwest Arkansas questioning Nichols. Hester, along with the majority of the committee, voted against taking $5 million from the state's $96 million surplus to pay for what is owed of prison employees. Nichols attributes the failure to a legislature eager to hold on to general improvement fund dollars, of which a percentage is dispersed to each member's district.
They would rather protect that than pay the workers what they're owed.
Committees also advanced measures changing health insurance for public school employees, such as eliminating coverage for part-timers, limiting spousal coverage, and redirecting tax savings from school districts to the insurance program. The biggest change yesterday was to legislation affecting what lottery games can be offered. Senator Jimmy Hickey says the change from a permanent ban on video monitor games to a temporary prohibition was needed to secure passage out of committee.
There is strong support for a permanent ban in both the fully in the Senate, in the committee, and on the floor. There is also strong support on the House floor. It's just within the House Rules Committee, we have not been able to get a full commitment of how people would vote.
The last-minute change would ban the monitor-based lottery drawings until the legislature meets in a regular session in March of 2015. The Lottery Commission had planned to roll out the new style of games this fall. The legislature meets for day two of the special session today and will likely pick up the bills passed out of committee to begin consideration on the floor. In Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.
The Beaver Watershed Alliance is in the middle of a project that aims to improve the water quality of the West Fork of the White River. As part of the West Fork Opportunity Assessment, a series of public meetings is being held in the communities throughout the watershed. Ozarks at-large's Timothy Dennis attended one of those meetings last night at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, and he has this report.
Courtney Thomas, the outreach coordinator for the Beaver Watershed Alliance, says that the West Fork Opportunity Assessment Project has been going on for about 9 months.
Started in September, and we held a group of initial meetings to tell people about our project, and then have been working with landowners and different stakeholders since then. So our goal is to develop a series of maps that show the water quality improvement opportunities and priorities and where we've been working with landowners, who's interested in being involved and participating in our program, so that we can ultimately work on improvement projects to improve the water quality of the West Fork of the White River and Beaver Lake.
Those maps add to data compiled from the Fayetteville Natural Heritage Association and from the Watershed Conservation Resource Center and the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. Thomas says that so far, much of the Opportunity Assessment Program has been focused on engaging landowners in the 22 miles of the West Fork watershed.
So we've been connecting with landowners through site visits, encouraging them to voluntarily use best management practices, and to connect them with resources to really, help them achieve their goals, do something that's good for their land and their property while also doing something that's good for the water quality of the river.
She says that the West Fork of the White River has been listed on the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality's list of impaired bodies of water because of excessive sediment and because of decreased fish habitat.
We're trying to remove the river, at least parts of the river, from that impaired rivers list, especially if we can identify specific places on the river that are in better or worse condition, then we can know where to focus, our energy and resources and projects to those areas.
But with other impaired sub-watersheds in the area, Why start with improving the West Fork?
It's just one of the really priority areas for us to work in, and so we wanted to start there and work on this priority area. And our goal is to do similar work to what we're doing here, taking inventory and assessments in each of the 7 sub-watersheds. And so we're starting out right now in the West Fork.
John Pennington, director of the Beaver Watershed Alliance, says that the water quality of the West Fork is markedly different downstream than it is at the upstream end.
You can look at the upstream part of the river and you can see that the water quality is better, although the way water looks is not a good way to judge its quality. But if you look at the aquatic species, if you go back to historic reports, you can still find smallmouth bass in the upper part of the river. And until recently, they couldn't be found in the lower part around the airport very much.
Meetings like this one in Fayetteville are a key to the West Fork Opportunity Assessment Project. A series of meetings held last fall throughout the West Fork watershed garnered residents' concerns and potential projects that could be undertaken to help improve the waterway. But Thomas says the ideas that came out of those previous meetings varied from town to town.
Winslow identified that they have a desire to conserve a waterfall along the river down there, as well as address some stream erosion at their park. And so we were able to help get them resources to address that erosion problem. And that's something that we wouldn't have known about if they hadn't come to our meeting and told us about that, you know, invited us out to the property so that we could see it and really come up with a plan and make it happen.
But the stated concerns of those in Fayetteville were considerably different.
Like I said, this is the most urbanized city in the watershed. And so there are a lot of concerns with invasive species removal and trash removal from trash, you know, washing in, running off during storms into the stream. Also have opportunities and interest in the conservation of Mount Kessler.
The main areas of concern for the crowd of slightly more than a dozen during Tuesday's Fayetteville meeting were related to incentivizing low-impact development in the city, which would allow for more natural groundwater flow into the river, and to making sure developers use proper protocols at construction sites, like adequate fencing, to prevent excessive runoff into the watershed. But also key to improving the West Fork watershed is the voluntary implementation of best management practices by landowners. Courtney Thomas says that the best management practices cover a wide range of land management techniques.
It can really be anything as, you know, simple as a soil test. So you're soil testing your property, your garden, your pasture, whatever, so that you can determine what type of fertilizer and how much fertilizer you should be putting down. And the goal of that is really to, you know, save people money and reduce the amount of fertilizer that's being used, because people have a tendency to over-fertilize. But if they know how much fertilizer they need and what type, then they can put that down and not have excess that's running off into the river.
But those best management practices can also include planting trees, grasses, and shrubs to improve riparian buffers along the river, reforesting properties, installing rain gardens to catch stormwater runoff, or even stream restorations to rebuild eroded stream banks. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It is Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
What in the world?
Folklore, and I believe it's Southern, that if the first words you say on the first day of the month are rabbit, 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 you'll have good luck.
I'm willing to give that a try.
Okay. Well,
so rabbit, rabbit, rabbit to you, too.
Right. Need to find out, try to find out the origin of that. It was a person who went ahead and finished her PhD in folklore who first told me about that.
Cool. Yeah, you need to find this out and let us know.
Yeah.
Right now, the words in Springdale are Yahoo, Ride'em, Cowboy.
Oh, yes. It's
it's Rodeo of the Ozarks time. This is 70 years.
Making it just about, if not, the oldest annual tradition in Northwest Arkansas. Is that right?
I believe that is true. It is 10 years younger than the rodeo in Fort Smith, but
right.
It's had different names.
Right.
So, obviously, it's a top PRCA rodeo, mm-hmm. as my colleague Lorinda Jenks likes to tell us every year, because she loves the rodeo. But this year they're trying to draw in the younger fans. So they're going to have a petting zoo for the first time, mm-hmm. which is kind of fun. And every day before the rodeo, and this is not new, the kids can get out and do stuff in the arena.
Like on the arena grounds?
Yeah. Okay. No, like in the arena.
Oh, okay.
Inside the arena. At 6:30, they have mutton busting.
Yeah.
Which is for children ages 4 to 6. It's basically kid versus sheep. They also have goat dressing. It's for ages 7 to 9, and it's trying to put a pair of pants on a goat.
Why in the world would you try to do that?
Because it's fun for the kids, and the goat gets over it, I guess.
All right.
And for ages 10 to 12, they have a calf scramble, which is basically tackle a calf and see if you win.
Do they ever ask the calves or the sheep or the goats if they want
to
do this?
Well, I'm sure the goats go back and talk about it among themselves later.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, you can find out all about the rodeo by calling 877-927-6336. Sign your kids up. The rodeo is at 6:30 Wednesday through Saturday at Parsons Stadium in Springdale. And if it's the rodeo parades you look forward to.
Yes.
And I loved that when we were on M Avenue in Springdale.
They just go right by your window.
Yeah, you just walked outside, said, hey, got some candy. They're at 3 o'clock on Wednesday and 10 a.m. on Saturday.
And take your umbrella. Not necessarily that it would rain, but there have been some rodeo parades on July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th that have really been hot.
I thought it was because you were going to be pelted with so much candy you needed an umbrella.
No, that's why you take the basket.
Ah, that's why he's the smart one.
Got to plan ahead. All right, thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Visual Arts will not take a summer vacation in the area. July has a packed schedule of art exhibits, receptions, and classes. Thursday, a solo show by Adam Posnack at the Sugar Gallery on the Fayetteville Square will highlight art inspired by religions and cultures of West and Central Africa. Friday, I visited with Adam as he was preparing the exhibit. We'll have highlights from that conversation in a moment. The Art Center of the Ozarks will hold a reception for artists Christina Mariotti and Taylor Shepherd Wednesday, July 9th from 6 until 8 p.m. Christina's exhibit is titled Women in Rooms and features her familiar style that has been described as placing characters in settings out of sync in time. Taylor's exhibit is titled Pareidolia, a word that describes a psychological phenomenon involving a vague and random stimulus being perceived as significant. Both exhibits will be up through August 1st.
The Fort Smith Regional Art Museum's exhibit of Carol Dickey's will remain up through all of July and into early August. Carol has titled this exhibit An Artist's Journey, and it includes the work she did in media such as watercolor, acrylic, and charcoal from when she started 30 years ago as a budding artist through work she's done the last 10 years as a full-time artist living in Eureka Springs. She describes her work as abstract naturalist. The exhibit will be shown through August 10th.
There are several opportunities to take art classes this month. The Fayetteville Underground has several classes in figure, portrait, and quick drawing. You can see their schedule at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Leilani Law will conduct camps for young artists in July. The camps are for 4 hours in the afternoon and include a camp for children from ages 9 to 12 who really like to draw machines, sea creatures, cathedrals, and fantasy landscapes. To learn about all of Studio Leilani's classes and camps for July, call 442-4396 or go to studioleilani.com.
Tomorrow, there are a pair of art workshops at the Bentonville Public Library. The classes, designed for young people, will use famous artists Wassily Andinsky and Joseph Albers as inspiration. The Andinsky workshop is tomorrow at 1. The other begins tomorrow at 2. Registration is limited and required, so if you're interested, call 271-6816 soon or seek out the link at bentonvillelibrary.org.
Another July class that might spark some interest is the Paint Your Pet Night at the Center for Art and Education on North 13th Street in Van Buren. The class is July 18th, a Friday. Bring a photograph of your pet and then paint that portrait. The cost is $50 and the fee includes all supplies and refreshments. No experience is necessary. Registration is required. You can either call 474-7767 or go online to art-ed.org.
And speaking of the Center for Art and Education in Van Buren, tonight a new exhibit of work by four artists, Jimmy Leach, Jason Davis, Carol Dosher, and Joanne Dosher, opens at the center. Each of the four artists mix nature and art for their work. Reception for all four artists is tonight beginning at 5.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will take down the William S. Paley Collection, A Taste for Modernism, soon. The last day is July 7th. Included in the collection are iconic works by Matisse and Picasso. After the 7th, the collection returns to the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
The museum will host artist Jeff Koons for a talk on July 11th. He created the Hanging Heart that is now over the Restaurant 11. Cost is $15. And the exhibit Global Citizen, the Architecture of Moshe Safdie, will be up through September 1st. And on Monday's edition of Ozarks, we'll take a tour through the exhibit and the museum with him.
Finally, a different kind of visual art, documentary film, will be featured at the Fayetteville Public Library this month. The film Blue Tattoo, about a 91-year-old Holocaust survivor, will be screened at the library on Friday the 11th at 2 p.m. The film includes music by Joe Crookston, who will also be in town for a series of events this month. A week later, July 18th, the library will show the documentary Growing Cities about urban farming at 12:30 that afternoon.
And Thursday, Adam Posnack will be at the Sugar Gallery on Fayetteville Square to welcome interested people to view his new exhibit titled Fundamento. The show combines Adam's specialty, pottery, with the images and inspirations for his work, the religions and cultures of Africa, and many places in the Caribbean. Friday afternoon, he was working in the extreme quiet of the closed gallery, determining where each piece would rest.
You know, in this particular case, there are definitely kind of four distinct sections.
Much of the exhibit is a showcase for Adam's work in pottery. Cups, plates, vases, and vessels emblazoned with the iconography of various African-inspired religious and cultural traditions of North, Central, and South America. The front of the Fundamento show includes pottery that can be used, not just viewed.
You can drink coffee out of the cups and put flowers in the vases and things, but then the iconography and the decoration, you know, I just want to kind of elicit a sort of a feeling or a vibe that would not be completely secular, I guess, is the way I would say it.
While the pieces themselves have everyday uses, the imagery speaks beyond the everyday. In fact, the red, black, and blue skulls, figures, and animals on many of Adam's works suggest a world beyond all of the everyday. He says he's looked a lot at African religious rituals and studied those religions and cultures.
Items and spaces, and then even more so what you would call the African diaspora, or now a term that people use is African Atlantic, which is sort of encompasses Africa and the diaspora and the interchange that sometimes happen between. So particularly, you know, Haitian voodoo.
Plus Cuban varieties of related religions, Brazilian religions. Anywhere, he says, there was a sizable population of people displaced by the atrocity of the slave trade. In the middle of Sugar Gallery, in the middle of America, the works can seem exotic, even to some, a bit spooky. But for many people on many continents, Adam says the images of skulls are not intended for shock, but rather to pay respect to ancestors. He says he wants his exhibit to open people up to something they may not know much about, and that the cultures of the people who inspired his work shouldn't be written off.
It's music, art, sculpture, food, you know, it's all these things. And it's just been so sadly maligned over, you know, the course of popular culture and media, you know, over the years.
Adam earned his bachelor's at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, spent a year at the Kansas City Art Institute, and received his MFA from Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. He says he first considered studying anthropology, and his interest in the cultures that helped shape his pottery probably began in his hometown of Macon, Georgia. That's where he would frequent a novelty shop
that kids would go to, and they sold, like, you know, like magic tricks and stuff like that. But that was, now looking back on it, I could see that was clearly a front. Like, they had a few things in there, all dusty and, you know, kind of, you know, not really tended to. But then they had a beaded curtain, and, you know, you could smell, like, incense coming out from there. And it was obviously there was something else going on that I, having gone back there, you know, later, as an adult, I now know was, you know, like spiritual consultations of some kind within that African-American hoodoo conjure, root work, whatever you want to call it, framework.
He pays homage to that hidden room with one of his own in his current exhibit. At the back of the Sugar Gallery, in the basement of 1 Center Street on the Fayetteville Square, there's a separate room. A curtain separates it from the larger space, and inside that separate room, an elaborate display of pottery and images from floor to ceiling fills the space.
These symbols on the wall are really characteristic of that, of this particular tradition that's called Palo Mayombe, or sometimes it's called Palo. But again, they use pots that hold the sacred materials. And I think the way most people would think about the pots and all of these things, it's like, it's not, you're not like worshiping a pot. It's, the pot becomes like a repository or a focal point for this spiritual force that you're appealing to.
Adam Posnack wants these cultures that are not part of the mainstream here to be examined with interest and respect. But he says he's aware that some Western subcultures, from a type of Harley Davidson enthusiast to a segment of punk rockers, views this imagery as, well, just cool. And he says he's not bothered by that.
No, not at all. I mean, if you look around here, you choose one symbol that's just, you know, the one that pops up the most, it's certainly that one, the skull, I mean. And I mean, the thing about skulls, it's, I feel two ways about them, you know? I don't really want to invoke the sort of punk rock, Harley Davidson association exactly, but I'm also fine if somebody, you know, it's fine. Skulls are very popular now.
Adam's exhibit, titled Fundamento, opens with a reception at the Sugar Gallery Thursday night from 5 until 8. The gallery is located in the basement floor of 1 East Center on the east side of the Fayetteville Square.
Next time you look up at the stars, think about this.
Inside you are the remains of a stellar explosion. You are made of stardust. And without the stars, there wouldn't be us.
I'm Guy Raz, the wonders of the universe and the people who still look up every night. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You can hear the TED Radio Hour Sundays at noon on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Antoinette, do you have anything to do for the 4th of July weekend?
Of course.
Do you have a moment during the 4th of July weekend when you're not scheduled to be doing something?
Does sleeping count?
Yes.
That does count?
I mean, that counts as something scheduled to
Oh.
do. Then no?
We'll see.
Okay. Well, in case you have some time to do something 4th of July weekend or a little bit beyond, we have plenty of opportunities for you to do things.
Yes. We have baseball tickets to the Naturals games. We have movie vouchers to Malco movie theaters. And we also have a pair of tickets to Opera in the Ozarks.
Right. We'll mail you the baseball vouchers. We'll mail you the movie passes to Malco. And then you'll be able to pick up the opera tickets at Will Call at Inspiration Point. We'll
so
give you all
let's
that
see,
information.
4 baseball tickets, 4 movie tickets, and then 2 Opera in the Ozark tickets.
Exactly.
Wonderful. What do I have to do to win these things?
It's so easy.
Do tell.
All you have to do is send us an email at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's it.
Give us your name. Let's know you want them.
And here's an interesting, or perhaps not interesting, statistical fact. Hmm. Three of our last four winners have come west of the Bobby Hopper Tunnel.
Of course you know this.
Well, I keep track.
Of course
right.
You do.
Ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Just tell us you want those tickets.
Since 2010, Modern Mission in Fayetteville has provided Northwest Arkansas residents with a place to play outdoor laser tag. In early June, the company quietly opened a new 12,000-square-foot building next to the outdoor battlefield that contains, among other things, four party rooms and a new indoor battlefield. Modern Mission is owned by Travis and Becky Fink, and it was created for the purpose of supporting a camp at their home.
We have 25 acres out there, and we just felt, we feel so blessed that we get to live there. And we started seeing kids that had never roasted marshmallows, they'd never been fishing, they just never, you know, we just started encountering these kids in our daily life, and we just thought, well, we need to share it. You know, and so we opened it up and we started New Creation Camp probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's just, you know, it's a place where people can just come and use this space. Like, we have a pond they can fish, we have a shop, we have a swimming pool, you know, things like that, that kids that may not get to do that can come and play. So we have youth groups that come out, we have father-son campouts, we have, you know, organized things like that. So we realized that all of that takes money and upkeep, right? And so instead of deciding to go ahead and ask for donations, we thought, you know, it'd be great to just start a business that could support that mission. So I started looking at a couple of things and ran across laser tag, outdoor laser tag, and we thought, what fun. And it goes along with the mission of getting kids out and enjoying God's creation, and, you know, where you're running and using all your muscles.
The construction of the new building has taken almost a year to complete. The new indoor battlefield is 8,000 square feet. That measurement is just the size of the bottom floor, and it doesn't include any of the wooden structures players can climb on or hide in. Owner Travis Fink says this new space will give guests a unique experience.
To our knowledge, we're the only facility like this in Arkansas. The closest facility that we know of that's even similar to this is in Houston. There are two in Wisconsin, both in the Milwaukee area, and another one is in California. So there aren't many facilities quite like this at this level. So we're really excited to launch this vision that we've had for quite some time.
Prior to participating in a mission, players watch a 4-minute training video that addresses some safety and courtesy rules. Afterward, they are taken into the battlefield room where they receive their mission details.
All units, this net. Be advised, a massive storm is moving in from the west, which is affecting all operational communications. Your objective for this mission is domination. There's one domination point located at the embassy. Your team must locate, claim, and hold each point in order to win. The team with the most points at the end of the round will be victorious. Report to your team leaders for further instructions.
Travis explains a lot of their customers are big video gamers, so he has tried to combine software, lighting, and sounds to immerse patrons in a unique environment that makes them feel like they're in a video game. So far, Travis says the most players they've had on the indoor battlefield at one time is 46, but they plan to cap it at 60 participants per session. Groups are typically divided into two teams, the red team and the blue team, and each is assigned a field marshal who uses a tablet computer to control the lights and sounds in the arena. For example, the field marshals can use sounds of a helicopter to simulate an extraction.
So you hear that, you know, it's close. You know, we've almost won. And then you've got to keep, you know, defend them and keep the other players off. And then we've got jet flybys. So we can have jets sound like they're circling through. You can simulate heavy rain and an air raid siren. So if a bomb, you know, air raid siren, jets are coming in, warnings and all that good stuff. We've got rain with thunder. We can simulate all different kinds of experiences with different lighting.
The field of play is comprised of a 3-story embassy building that's connected to 4 2-story buildings. The structures are joined together by catwalks, and they contain secret passages and backdoor accesses guests can climb.
So that way you don't get pinned in a certain area, you've always got a way out. And the other thing is, to keep it safe, We don't want any bottlenecks. We don't want 40 or 50 people all rushing to one point. So with 6 points of entry to get to the second floor, we can divide that traffic. So it's a lot safer. We've got the Deuce and a Half Army truck, which is actually, we take it to military events and military appreciation days, and it's a functioning truck. It actually works, but it makes a great prop, so we keep it in here now.
Thanks to some lighting, sound, and a smoke machine, Travis and his crew can also simulate the truck blowing up. Groups can play a variety of missions, but instead of being about the individual, the missions are objective-based and team-focused. One mission, for example, requires a team to keep possession of a cube. Travis describes it as a high-tech version of Capture the Flag or King of the Hill. During any mission, a player is equipped with a gun that has 6 red or blue lights. This represents a player's health. Once players lose all of their lives, they can run to a respawn station where they press a button to restore their health. So instead of being out, patrons can continue playing for the entire hour. Offering a longer period of playtime for a reasonable price is one of the perks owner Travis Fink says he can offer patrons. He also says participating in laser tag missions is safe, and it provides his customers with a form of exercise.
When people say, what do you do? And we say, oh, we run outdoor laser tag and an indoor battlefield. They think 1980s blacklight laser tag, kiddie laser tag. 7-year-olds love this, and 75-year-olds love this. They just love it. Because it's different, it's unique, and we do different missions.
Modern Mission will celebrate the official grand opening of its new indoor laser tag battlefield, July 10th. However, Modern Mission is already open to the public. The indoor battlefield is open for reservations only Monday through Wednesday. The battlefield is open to the public Thursday through Sunday, and hour-long missions start on the half hour. The final session of the day begins 1 hour before closing time. Patrons can participate in a mission for $20. More information is available at modernmission.com. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Gravette.
And one more item for your visual arts calendar in July. Fayetteville Underground Thursday night will present Joe Alexander, 40 years of sign painting. You can see his signs all over Northwest Arkansas. This is in collaboration with the New Design School Press. It takes place at the Fayetteville Underground, and that is Thursday night, part of First Thursday. In addition, Candy Lee will be performing music in the galleries. That's presented by Maybell Music.
Lots happening this week, even though holiday. You've got First Thursday in Fayetteville. You've got First Friday in Bentonville. Just all sorts
Rodeo
of things.
Ozarks.
Rodeo of the Ozarks. We will still have a show for you on Friday, but it'll be kind of a special show, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of what has become a tradition now, right around the 4th. Some of our favorite musical performances from inside Furman Garden Performance Studio from the first 6 months of the year.
Yeah, so there will be a show, and it'll be lots of music.
Yes, and you, Christina, and I will all be hosting that day.
We will.
Let's see. Speaking of music.
Yes.
There is, of course, a lot of music coming up in the next few weeks, including Annie Selleck and Pat Bergeson. They will be performing together at the Fayetteville Underground Saturday, July 12th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15. This is them collaborating together for the song I Want to Know You. It was recorded inside Nashville's NPR affiliate, WPLN. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You're back tomorrow with Christina.
I am.
Thanks for listening.
If I could step inside this photograph, go back in time and know you when you were someone I didn't know. A boy of maybe 5 shoelaces flying, I'd sit and watch you adoringly, more deeply fascinated.